Hey everyone, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt at the Oracle. It's Thursday, December 24th, 2015, and it's time for another edition of the College Daily Slant, powered by Pro Football Focus and brought to you by DraftKings.com. This is the PFF radio show dedicated to college football and daily fantasy sports, and we have a great show coming up. With me is Wes Huber, the PFF Fantasy College Football lead writer. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF underscore Wes. Wes, how's it going?
Doing great. Looking forward to Christmas and another round of bowl games.
Yeah, you have any plans in particular besides just watching football?
You know, it's a tough season at PFF. A lot of work. Just rest, relaxation, watch football.
All right. Spend time with family. Yeah, as you mentioned, it's almost Christmas, football and family. We are in the thick of bowl season, and to help you get all the information you need, Pro Football Focus is breaking down all the games and analyzing all the players, and you can have access to all of our premium content with the PFF Fantasy Gold Package for only $29.99. All right, Wes, let's jump into it. As was the case last weekend, there are only five games in this slate. Let's go through the matchups one by one, and then, of course, we will get to our DFS plays in the second half of the show. Let's start with the Hyundai Sun Bowl. Miami, Florida versus Washington State. The game is in El Paso. Washington State is a slight favorite. Neither team really has a home field advantage. What do you think of this game?
It's one of the most even matchups of the weekend. Like you said, it's Washington State's only favored by 2.5 points. Before I get into this matchup, I do want to run over some injury information, and I'll do it for each of the matchups. For Miami, basically the only person of any significance, one of their safeties, Jamal Carter, has been suspended. He's the number one run defender in Miami's secondary. Could possibly open some things up there. As for Washington State, I'm concerned with Luke Falk. He was upgraded to probable. From my count, he's been concussed twice in the last 2 weeks and possibly three. I'm not sure he didn't have another concussion prior to that from one of the other games that I worked. And if he misses any time, the Cougars offense, as has already been shown, it just suffers significantly. His backup, Peyton Bender, true freshman, is just not ready for prime time. And I doubt he's going to be any better coming into a bowl game. And the other injury information for Washington State is wide receiver Gabe Marks. He has a leg injury. He will play after leaving the game against Colorado in the fourth quarter. Getting into the matchup, we have a pair of teams that basically have struggled against the run. Miami, next year after this game, they'll welcome Mark Richt as their head coach, which is just great for that program. But they will be coached in this game by Larry Scott. They've dropped six bowl games in a row. They haven't won since defeating Nevada in 2006. Washington State, as I said, struggling against the run. They've allowed 200 yards per game, possibly pushing Joseph Yearby and Mark Walton into additional value. Neither back really has any breakaway threat. There's only one 15-plus yard run every 15 attempts combined between the two, but both are capable receivers, and that is big in DraftKings format. And they both broke tackles at above average rate this year. The Cougars, they'll be looking for their first bowl win in 12 years. Washington State, they're number one in the FBS in red zone scoring, whereas Miami is 108th. The Cougars could see some running room. As I mentioned, their top run defending safety is out, and they are actually allowing 211 rushing yards per game. Now, I know we normally wouldn't consider Washington State a team that would focus on the run, but if you watch their games, they run two back sets. They have basically have a three-headed running back rotation, but with Gerard Wicks, he runs the one back set the majority of the game, and they run the ball through him quite a bit. He is their main rushing threat. And he finished 39th in the FBS with a 76.3 elusive rating. And he also had 30 receptions, so he can get you some points there. I think this game is basically as Vegas has it. We have a 62.5 over under, which is the second highest on the slate. So some DFS potential in there. But I, 2.5 points, it's a tough matchup to call.
All right, now let's go to the next matchup. Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl, Washington versus Southern Mississippi. The game is being played at the historic Cotton Bowl. Even though Southern Miss should have something of a home field advantage on the neutral site, UW is a heavy favorite in the game with the slate's lowest over-under. We have UW's stingy defense going against Southern Miss's high-scoring offense. Wes, how do you think this game will play out?
It's exactly as you said. The game features one of the best offenses versus one of the best defenses in the FBS. Yeah, and Washington's favored by 8.5 points, which is the second highest spread for a team in this slate. There's only a 55 over-under, which is the lowest, so we might not want to dip too deep into this game. There's no injuries to report outside of Washington, and probably going to be without running back Dwayne Washington, but that's been the case, and it hasn't really mattered lately as they haven't been utilizing him very much. Southern Miss head coach Todd Monken has done a great job leading a resurgent turnaround for that program. They were 3-9 last year to turn it around to a 9-3 finish this year. And we can see it from week one against Mississippi State when they took them down to the fourth quarter. They did lose, but it was a great effort. Consider this: Southern Miss is just the second team in FBS history to have a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards, two running backs rush for 1,000 yards, and a wide receiver catch 1,000 yards. And which just says all you need to know about that offense. Junior quarterback Nick Mullins, he was the Conference USA Player of the Year, which is a significant achievement considering some of the players in the Conference USA. And he led the Eagles to an average of 40.6 points per game and 520 yards per game. But on the flip side, we have Washington ranked as 28th in the nation in total defense, and they were number one in the Pac-12. They're allowing 17.8 points per game, which was 12th in the FBS, and 350 total yards per game, which was 29th. One thing that we might see come into play in this game, Washington has committed 21 turnovers this year, and they've taken away 27. That defense has helped them out quite a bit. But in the games where they lost, the turnover margin played a big role. And of course, Southern Miss is coming off that disappointing destruction by Western Kentucky. So we'll see how this goes. The Pac-12 team is favored by a large margin. Hard to go against that spread, and I'm a big believer in Jake Browning, so I'm definitely going Washington in this matchup.
All right, now let's go to the next bowl game, the New Era Pinstripe Bowl. We have Indiana versus Duke. The game is being played at Yankee Stadium. I love those kind of throwback games that are played in baseball stadiums. It's very reminiscent of an old school bowl game that you would have seen in the 1950s. This game has by far the slate's highest over under. Indiana is a slight favorite. What are your thoughts on this game, Wes?
I love this matchup. This is where it's at. DFS potential everywhere. Indiana's only favored by 2.5 points. I love that. I love the fact that we could have a back and forth struggle. And like you mentioned, the number one over under, as far as the injury report goes, Jordan Howard, there's really no definitive information out there. The knee injury that's essentially kept Howard out the last two games, outside of three carries on the opening drive against Maryland. We'll find some more definitive information closer to game time, but his comments indicate that he wants to play. And he's determined to play, so I'm siding on the belief that he will play in this game. As for Duke, they will be without their even more than arguably, their best player, Jeremy Cash, their strong safety slash linebacker. He had wrist surgery. So they're going to be without their All-American. Cash allowed 72% of his passes to be completed this last year, and 6.6 yards after the catch. He wasn't that great in defending the pass, but his loss will be felt mostly in run defense, where Indiana's running backs should have an easier time finding the edge and splitting through some seams. Because Cash, he was number one in the FBS in run stop percentage among safeties. Indiana, they're looking for their first bowl victory since beating Baylor 24-0 back in 1991. The Hoosiers offense, though, is absolutely great this year, averaging 36.2 points per game, 22nd in the FBS. They had 40 plus in their last three games. But at the same time, where they're averaging 36.2, they're allowing 37.1 points per game, which is third worst. They finished fifth in the FBS with only 11 turnovers allowed, which is really impressive. And the Hoosiers, they've allowed 507 yards per game this season, which was the third worst among the Power Five programs, ahead of only Texas Tech and Kansas. So, I mean, that's a huge achievement right there, especially for a team that is in a bowl game, considering the type of teams that Texas Tech puts out. You know, they have a dominant offense. So it just shows you how good this offense is and how bad their defense is. Indiana led the Big Ten in 20-plus yard plays, and two-thirds of those occurred through the air. Finally, Indiana is last in the FBS in pass defense. They're allowing 326.3 yards per game. As far as Duke, they've lost four of their last five games. They did snap their losing streak to Wake Forest, but only beat them 27-21, which doesn't give a lot of confidence. They had allowed 42.1 points per game over their previous five games prior to Wake Forest. And Duke will play in its fourth consecutive bowl game, which is a school record, but they haven't been victorious since beating Arkansas in the 1961 Cotton Bowl. Quarterback Thomas Cirk is one of five Power Five QBs to lead his team in passing and rushing yards. For me, I think that with Jeremy Cash, we would have a near even matchup. Without Jeremy Cash, this game's going to Indiana. And it's going to be an exciting game regardless. Lots of DFS plays in there.
Yeah, good stuff. That really is the matchup to target for DFS in this slate. Now, the next matchup, we have the Camping World Independence Bowl, maybe one of the best named bowl games of the season. We have Tulsa versus Virginia Tech and head coach Frank Beamer's last game with VTech. This one is being played in Shreveport, Louisiana. The Hokies are being the big favorites in the game. And they are going against Tulsa's almost non-existent defense. Wes, give me the details.
Yeah, 14-point favorites for the Hokies. And, you know, it's you have to think that Frank Beamer's last game is worth at least a few of those points. I really don't see them losing this game. Let me just go ahead and throw that out there. Tulsa's had a great turnaround season. But let me jump into the injury report. The Virginia Tech's basically the only one that has anybody, and it's somebody who's already been out. But I just wanted to remind, Kendall Fuller is out for the season. That does affect the passing defense and where they did finish ninth this season. But I don't even know if that was a bad thing for them. They seem to have played better as far as defending the pass when Kendall Fuller went down for some reason. Tulsa finished with the 11th ranked passing offense, averaging 330 yards per game. Tulsa finished 59th in total offense in 2014. And under Phil Montgomery, they've jumped up to 14th this season. So that's a great turnaround for that program. Tulsa also finished 25th in scoring offense this year. They finished 63rd in run defense, but that number is skewed really by the volume of the passing game. They were actually pretty decent against the run running the ball this year with a trio of guys. And I'll be excited when Ramadi Warren really gets a shot to step forward and claim a chunk of those carries, hopefully next year. Like I said, Virginia Tech finished ninth in pass defense. So that's gonna limit the value of Dane Evans, I would think. But, of course, this is bowl season. Anything can happen. Virginia Tech has a 34th ranked total defense. They're 75th in run defense, and that does present an opportunity considering the Tulsa running game is not as bad as it looks on paper. And they allowed their last two opponents to rush for 230-plus yards. The Hokies have also been hurt by scrambling quarterbacks. Now, that is not a strength of Dane Evans, but a quarterback, Chad President, could come into play there. As we saw, it won't be last night when you hear this, but we saw last night in the Georgia Southern game, Fabian Upshaw, man, he had a great game, came out of nowhere. So, I mean, it may not be a bad idea to toss a dart at Chad President and a GPP. And then Virginia Tech, they ranked 47th in scoring defense. So it's pretty decent. I mean, this is a game where you can target individual players for Tulsa, but I wouldn't go any deeper than that. This is a game Virginia Tech is going to win, obviously, from the Vegas spread. I really can't see Tulsa taking this game. But as far as Virginia Tech, there's several options on that team.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And can you imagine how much more exciting this game would be if Kevin Lucas were still healthy and able to play? I think it would be fantastic.
It would. Absolutely. I agree.
Now, the final bowl game of Saturday night is Foster Farms Bowl. This one is being played at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. We have UCLA versus Nebraska. The Bruins should have a sizable home field advantage, and they are a significant favorite over the Cornhuskers. Wes, is this game even going to be close?
I think so. It depends. What kind of Tommy Armstrong are we going to get? I think this is going to be a lot closer game than the spread would suggest, and it would be the one game that I would go against the spread. As far as the injury report, and this might shed a little light on why I feel that way. UCLA, the offensive line is far from 100%. First of all, and excuse me if I offend anyone, but I don't mean to, but some shady stuff out of UCLA. Left guard Alex Redmond left the team, declared for the draft, and hired an agent. And he's not even going to play in this bowl game. I mean, that is just I don't even know how to put that. That's ridiculous, something that you don't hear very often. And then in addition to that, their right guard has an injured ankle. Their left tackle has an injured knee. They are both probable, but they're both soldiering through their injuries. So they're clearly not 100% there. As far as Nebraska goes, their sole injury that of any significance is wide receiver Alonzo Moore, and he already returned to practice, and he should play. Now, Nebraska, let's look at them. They're 5-7, which is not impressive. They lost seven games. That's pretty bad. And you know, they only got in because the NCAA was unable to fill the 80 bowl game spots with six-win teams. But consider that five of those losses were by 5 points or less, and all seven were by less than 10 points. In addition, losses to BYU, Wisconsin, Miami, and Illinois came in the final minute of the game. The Cornhuskers are number 8 in the FBS versus the run, only allowing 113.4 yards per game. And also consider, Nebraska is the only team this season that's beat Michigan State. So they definitely can show up in these big games. And that's something that Tommy Armstrong has usually done. Here let's get to the bad. They're 121st against the pass. They're allowing 288 yards per game. They finished 117th in the FBS in turnovers, but UCLA actually finished lower than that. Actually 119th in with a minus 13 turnover margin, and they were 108th with 7.3 penalties per game, many of which, like I said, can be blamed on the hot and cold arm of Tommy Armstrong. And when I said he shows up for the big games, that's outside of the Iowa game. If you watch that game, man, he had a just one of the worst games in the entire season of college football. Four interceptions, and they couldn't have come at the worst times. Just killed the momentum of his team every single time. But consider last year when Armstrong was going through the same up and down struggles. He came out in the Holiday Bowl against USC and passed for 381 yards. So he could surprise and produce some DFS potential. UCLA, on the other hand, they've started strong. They came out 4-0, and everyone was talking college playoff, this and that, with their true freshman quarterback, but finished 5-4 in Pac-12 play. And they had third in the South Division. So, I mean, and still with the losses, the injuries that they had, Miles Jack was a huge loss. Here's an interesting tidbit. Nebraska head coach Mike Riley actually handed UCLA head coach Jim Mora Jr. his first college loss in 2012. Now, getting to the UCLA side, quarterback Josh Rosen has had a tremendous year, the Pac-12 freshman of the year. And I'm not going to take away anything away from that. But the Nebraska pass rush has actually been pretty decent this season. And Rosen's completion percentage, which was already far too low, 59.1%, drops to 41% when he's under pressure. And he's only thrown 2 touchdowns to 4 interceptions in that situation. Now, looking at the both sides here, the major differences between these teams, UCLA finished 88th against the run. Nebraska finished 8th. So that presents an opportunity for Armstrong not only to attack UCLA's defense with his arm, but also his legs. And also we could see, and as we've mentioned many times, why weren't they playing Imani Crossnet? Now we can see him over the last few weeks with some touchdowns and some decent games. He could potentially put some points up there. The UCLA pass D was 41st, better than Nebraska, of course, at 121st. But the turnover margin greatly favors UCLA. It all boils down to Tommy Armstrong. If Tommy Armstrong comes out, protects the football, I think Nebraska can win this game. If he comes out again and continues to throw interceptions, then it's easily going to go in UCLA's favor.
All right, Wes, fantastic stuff there as usual. Now we're going to get into our DFS plays in just a minute. But before that, I want to remind everyone that if you want to play daily fantasy football on a larger slate, a slate with more than 5 games, you can always play 1 week fantasy football for the full slate of NFL games at DraftKings.com, where it already feels like the playoffs. With millions of dollars being won each week, every play in every game could take you closer to a life-changing payday. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code PFF. With your first deposit, you can play for free in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest. First place takes home $100,000. Enter PFF for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That is DraftKings.com. All right, Wes, let's get into those DFS plays for the Saturday slate of games. Let's start at the quarterback position. Who do you like there?
This is a very simple play for me over on DraftKings. A very solid play. Nate Sudfeld of Indiana on DraftKings, only $6,600, whereas on FanDuel is $8,200, but you have a less positions, higher, more money to spend. He's just as good of a play going up against Duke, like we mentioned. And Duke secondary finished 84th this season. They'll, like I said, they'll be without All-American safety Jeremy Cash. In Indiana's last 6 games that have come against, 3 of those have come against sub 80th ranked pass defense. Sudfeld has averaged 40.1 points per game. That's that plus the highest over under for the Saturday slate is all I need to say there. So he's a great play at quarterback.
Yeah, I like Sudfeld a lot too. And you're right about the distinction in salaries from DraftKings to FanDuel. I'm going with the quarterback on the other side of that matchup, Thomas Cirk with Duke. Finding discounts in a 5-game slate it's a challenge, but I think Cirk is a decent option for the price. As a producer, he's in that tier of quarterbacks underneath Washington State's Luke Falk when he's healthy. Sark isn't an elite player, but in 11 games, he has 143 rushes for 564 yards and 6 touchdowns. So his rushing ability gives him a very solid production floor for any given matchup. And Duke, as we've talked about, is a 2.5-point underdog to Indiana, but they do have the slate's third highest implied team total. So that really should be a back and forth game, lots of scoring. And because the game should be relatively close throughout, I think that Sark will remain very active as both a passer and a runner for the entirety of that contest. So I think that he has a good chance of getting at least 200 yards passing. I'd say maybe closer to 250. I think he could get maybe 50 yards rushing, and I think he could get 2 or 3 touchdowns. Now, Wes, let's go to the running back position. Who do you like there?
The good thing about Sark is he's going to produce regardless of the score, whether they're up or down. At running back, this is a hunch, and I'm really liking this play this weekend. Southern Miss running back Ito Smith going up against Washington. He's $5,400 on DraftKings, $7,200 on FanDuel. Now the numbers, you go and you look through the statistical data, it's all going to favor Washington. But like I said, I have a feeling that Smith is going to have a big game here. Washington ranks 29th in run defense. But when Smith has faced top 15 run defenses this season, he's averaged 155 total yards, 4.5 receptions, 2 touchdowns, and 33.5 fantasy points per game. Over the last 3 weeks, Smith ranks 12th in rushing yards, 2nd in touchdowns, and 3rd in missed tackles. Even last week against Western Kentucky, when they got down big, he was still fed the ball and produced. I think Ito Smith is going to have a game here, and it's going to be regardless of the matchup with Washington's tough defense. And at the prices that he's being listed, I'm all over him.
Wes, fantastic information there. The split about how he has done against top run defenses, that's really compelling there. I'm going with Trayvon McMillan for Virginia Tech. He's one of the most expensive running backs in the slate, and so he might look overpriced if you look only at seasonal data. But McMillan has been Virginia Tech's lead back only since the team's 6th game of the season. So in his 7 games as the primary runner, he's averaged over 20 rush attempts per game. He's never had fewer than 80 yards in any contest. In those 7 games, he scored 5 touchdowns, and he's surpassed 100 scrimmage yards 5 times. As we've talked about, Virginia Tech is a big favorite, a 14-point favorite over Tulsa. They have a slate-high implied team total of 37.75 points. Again, Tulsa is one of the worst teams in the FBS against the run. They allow over 238 yards and 2.7 touchdowns rushing per game. Additionally, McMillan was the lead back for 2 games in which Virginia Tech finished with scores comparable to the team's implied total in this matchup. And McMillan averaged 20 rushes for 119 yards and 1.5 touchdowns in those games. So I think with the high implied point total, the big spread, the positive game script, McMillan should touch the ball at least 20 times. I think he should get regular opportunities throughout the contest. So I think he has a pretty good chance of getting over 100 yards and scoring a touchdown, maybe room for more. Wes, let's go to the wide receiver position. Who do you like there?
Sticking with the Hokies and going with Virginia Tech wide receiver Isaiah Ford, $5,200 on DraftKings, $6,800 on FanDuel going up against Tulsa. His quarterback, Michael Brewer, broke his collarbone against Ohio State in week 1, returned in week 8, and it took some time to knock the rust off, and the passing offense took some time to develop, which greatly helped Trayvon McMillan acquaint himself to the featured role. Since then, Brewer has, even since he returned, averages as far as since week 8, 9.2 targets per game. That's plenty enough at $5,200 on DraftKings and $6,800 on FanDuel. In their last 2 games, Ford has seen 12.5 targets per game. He's 10th in receiving yards during that time and 13th in touchdowns. He caught all 14 catchable passes, including all five from 20-plus yards. And he was 9th in the FBS with a 3.89 yards per route run in weeks 13 and 14. So he's a great play in that matchup. Like I said, there's several great plays in the Virginia Tech-Tulsa matchup.
All right, I'm going with Gabe Marks from Washington State. You mentioned him earlier as a guy who is likely to play in the game, but did come out of the last game with a leg injury. I guess I'm sort of rolling the dice there, but he's the most productive active wide receiver in the slate. He's not cheap, but you know what you're getting out of him. He's been one of the best and most consistent receivers in the FBS this season. He scored a touchdown in 9 of 12 games. He's also surpassed 75 yards receiving in 9 of 12 games. Washington State is a 2.5-point favorite over Miami. We've talked about them. That should be a back-and-forth, pretty tight game. I think that they will be using Marks a lot in that game. And even though the implied team total of 32.5 points isn't elite, in the seven games in which the Cougars had scores comparable to that implied team total, Marks still produced exceptionally well. He had 9.1 receptions for 98.3 yards and 0.9 touchdowns per game. And that's over a seven-game sample. So with the game expected to be close and in that scoring range, I think Marks should benefit from positive game script. And I think he has a pretty good chance of finishing with around 8 receptions, 100 yards, and a touchdown. Again, assuming that he is healthy and that they use him the way that they have used him up to this point. Now, Wes, let's go to the tight end position. Who do you like there?
I'll be honest with you. I'm not as concerned about Marks as I am Luke Falk. I just want to see him make it through the game without having a brain injury. So as long as he can stay on the field, I think Marks is going to have a good day. At tight end, I like Nebraska's Seathan Carter, $2,700 going up against UCLA. Nebraska has made it publicly known that they're looking to get the ball into Carter's hands. If you go back to several of our podcasts back, you'd hear when I said Seathan Carter is going to be a playmaker for Nebraska. It's the perfect storm of factors falling into place for him in that system. Consider that 11 of his 22 catches and 60% of his 297 receiving yards have come in the last four games. During that time, he has caught all 8 catchable passes, both of his targets from 20 plus yards, and is 5th in the FBS among tight ends with 2.83 yards per route run. When UCLA has faced offenses that feature tight ends, which many of those teams don't feature their or don't utilize their tight ends as much as Nebraska does Carter, they've allowed them to average 3 receptions, 40 yards, and 0.3 touchdowns. Now, when we're looking at the tight end position, if we can get 6 to 7 points, that's a great get for at the position. These are very thin positions during the bowl slates. If you look at your midweek bowl tight end slate or pools, and you sometimes you're digging between guys that average a point per game on the season. So yeah, there's a few guys on this slate to target, and I really like Seathan Carter.
Yeah, Wes, this really is a subpar slate for tight ends, but you know, someone has to be the best, and I think that guy is Bucky Hodges with Virginia Tech. And he's actually a pretty decent player, and I guess one would expect that if he's the most expensive and most productive tight end. But he hasn't really progressed this year as I think people expected him to progress. At the same time, as you mentioned earlier, he was without his starting quarterback, Michael Brewer, for a full 5 games and then for parts of 2 other games. So he hasn't really been operating under the best circumstances. However, in the final 5 games in the season, and those were the games in which Brewer fully played, Hodges has been at his best. He's averaged 4 receptions for almost 50 yards and 0.8 touchdowns per game. Now, granted, a lot of that production came in one big game, but he did have another game in which he scored a touchdown. Again, Virginia Tech is a big favorite over Tulsa. Hodges is 2nd on the team in touchdowns receiving, and out of any of the tight ends in the slate, I think he has the best chance of scoring a touchdown this week. And for a guy who is the best in the slate, he's only priced at $3,200 on FanDuel, which really isn't all that much more than some of the other tight ends in the slate who are substantially worse than he is. So I think Hodges has a pretty good chance of getting 4 receptions and 40 yards, and I think maybe even odds of getting a touchdown. If he doesn't, he probably won't kill your team, but he does have, I think, much better chances of getting a touchdown than any other tight end in this slate. Now, Wes, let's go to the flex position. Who do you like there?
Yeah, you know my feelings on Bucky Hodges, and I have my fingers crossed that somebody can convince him to come back and play for Justin Fuente next year, because we would probably see a blossoming Bucky Hodges in that program. At flex, I like Miami running back Mark Walton going up against Washington State, coming in at $4,900. I previously mentioned that Walton is a capable receiver. He's able to shed tackles at an above average rate. Washington State's allowed 200 yards on the ground per game. And over his last four games, Walton has averaged 81 yards, one touchdown, and 16.4 fantasy points per game. When you get down to the bottom of your lineups, $4,900, I can see Walton having a big game here against Washington State, and especially if Luke Falk goes down. I can see both Walton and Joseph Yearby having big games in this one, just running out the clock. So I'm really, obviously you can tell I'm concerned about Luke Falk in this game. I don't know what doctor has cleared him to play after potentially three concussions over the last 3 weeks, but yeah, we'll see.
All right. So for flex, I'm going with Devine Redding, the backup running back at Indiana. He's the backup to Jordan Howard. As we've mentioned, he's battled knee injuries for almost half of the season. He had to miss Indiana's most recent game. In the five games that Howard has partially or fully missed due to the injury, Redding has really stepped in. He's been a very capable player. He has over 20 carries and almost a reception and a half per game in those games. And he has almost 100 yards and a touchdown per game. And in four of those five games, he's either scored multiple touchdowns or rushed for at least 130 yards. Indiana, again, a close favorite over Duke in what should be a very high-scoring game. I think if there's positive game script, Redding should really be getting a lot of touches throughout the game, especially if Jordan Howard misses the contest. And Wes, as you said, he's questionable. We're really not sure. I think even if he does play, though, he could be limited. And Redding on the season has received at least 12 touches in 9 of 12 games this season. And he actually scored 3 touchdowns in the first 4 games of the season, and that was before Howard injured his knee. So I think even if Howard plays, Redding could be a sneaky flex option. I think he could touch the ball a lot against Duke. And then especially if Howard is out or if there's news before the game that Howard is going to be limited, I think Redding is a great option. So I think there's the potential there, especially kind of thinking of as we're going to go towards GPPs. But he could have like 100 scrimmage yards and a touchdown. I think that's very possible. Now, Wes, let's go to GPPs. Who do you like this week?
I completely agree with you. I think Redding is going to see his carries regardless of what Howard does. And if Howard is out, you're just going to get even more. And this season, we've seen that Howard has been a game time decision and went out on the field when lineups have already been locked and decided late, very late, that he wasn't going to play. So having Redding in there is a great play, which is why I'm my GPP play is the number 3 running back on the team. And that's running back Andrew Wilson. Now, he's only on DraftKings. He's a DraftKings exclusive at $3,900. We've gone over the matchup with Washington State. It's obvious that this could be a monster play if Howard is out, which is why he's my GPP dart here. You know, Wilson, he deserves a shot. I mean, the guy's a former walk-on senior playing in his final game in week 13 against Purdue without Howard. He was handed 15 carries, and he produced 52 yards and a touchdown, plus he had a 14 or 18-yard catch. And if Indiana gets ahead, they start to burn the clock. He could see a heavy workload. As we've seen with a few of the blowouts in the previous bowl games already this year. So, yeah, I think if Howard plays. I think Redding is a great play, but if Howard doesn't play, I think this is where Andrew Wilson could be a really sneaky GPP play to grab some points that not many people are going to be touching.
Yeah, I really like that play. And as you mentioned there at the end, it's a contrarian play where almost no one will be on it, and it could end up paying off big. Now, my GPP play is Nick Mullins of Southern Miss, and I'm kind of going at this from a contrarian angle. As we talked about, he's one of the slate's most productive quarterbacks, and he's not nearly that expensive because he has that tough matchup going against Washington. In only 3 of 13 games has he passed for fewer than 2 touchdowns. In 7 of 13 games, he's passed for at least 3 touchdowns. And in 9 of 13 games, he's passed for at least 300 yards. Again, Southern Miss is a pretty big underdog to Washington. They're not projected to score many points, but Washington is pretty stout against the run in certain ways. And I think the Golden Eagles will be throwing the ball a lot for most of that contest. And all it really takes is 1 or 2 blown plays for the game to swing in a different way. And as you mentioned, there's always the possibility for turnovers. And, I think this is one of those plays that not many people will be on Mullins, but he does have very high upside because we've seen him do it consistently throughout the season up to this point. So I guess it just kind of depends on which way you want to throw your lot. But Southern Miss has a very high scoring offense. And in a sort of alternate world, it wouldn't be crazy to think at some point, if things go a certain way, they could just continue to be a high scoring offense in this game. So not a GPP play for all of your tournament lineups, but for a couple of your lineups. So I think he does have some good upside for that Heart of Dallas Bowl. Wes, any closing thoughts on this slate?
Yeah, and this is basically for this slate and for bowl games moving forward. Play your seniors. Look at the class. Look at the guys that are coming back, especially the guys that are very close to breaking team records, program records. You want to get these guys in there because they're going to get them the ball, and it could possibly put some cash in your pocket.
All right, good stuff there, Wes. And I think that will do it for this edition of the College Daily Slant. Be sure to tune in next episode for our breakdown of even more college bowl games and our DFS plays of the week. You can catch us on PFF Radio, subscribe to the show on iTunes, listen to the show on Stitcher and Blog Talk Radio, and watch the show on YouTube and the Fantasy Sports Network. For Wes Huber on Twitter at PFF_Wes, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt of the Oracle. Thanks for tuning in.
PFF Radio is powered by Pro Football Focus. Follow PFF Radio on Twitter, at PFF Radio. Also follow us on Twitter, at PFF_Fantasy. Join the conversation and like us on Facebook, and plus one us on Google+.